If there's some lines in scripture that can be misinterpreted and then just go horribly wrong in the process, it's the last one in today's gospel. If you ask anything of the Father in my name, he will give it to you. And you can just totally imagine a certain depraved mental process that says, excellent, he will smite my enemies and destroy them all. It really, that was not Jesus' intention. And so we often have to go deeper into what he's saying, into what he's meaning, to kind of get at the heart of the matter. And so one of the things that's really important about the life of prayer is to realize that its purpose, its job, is to transform our heart according to the pattern of Christ, well, according to the pattern of the Father as revealed by Christ through the working of the Holy Spirit, that these things transform how we think and feel so that our desires are different than they were before. And it's our change in desire that is able to also change how we do things and how effective we are in getting them done. Because it's usually our motivations and it's usually our inspiration for doing something that reveals how tough we are in the doing. You know, like if you have a pretty vapid motivation for serving somebody, the moment you don't get what you want anymore, you're going to quit, drop, and leave the whole thing. Basic human behavior, really. So if somebody joins or volunteers to feel good about themselves, the moment that they no longer feel good about themselves, they drop volunteering. Just like that. There has to be something that holds the person there to be able to say, this is worth doing even amidst difficulty. And so one of the great saints in terms of inspiring the church, and well, at least he inspires me, to in terms of having this reflection of the desire of the Father is Saint François de Laval. He was a relatively sickly guy, still of a relatively wealthy family, but he renounced it all. He renounced it all to be a missionary to New France. And when he came here, he did a tremendous amount of work to be able to establish the church in this new world, and to be able to establish the people that had come here to New France to establish their lives and to grow. But he was also equally concerned and careful for the first peoples that were living in the exact same neighborhood that were right next to these new French colonists. That he treated the first peoples and the French peoples with the same care and dignity. And in fact, one of the things that constantly got him in trouble with the powers of the world around him was, the most famous one would be, his disgust and anger at the alcohol trade that was being used to leverage control over the first peoples that were there. You know, it was the same thing that the British did when they landed in China. They couldn't find anything that the Chinese wanted, so they sold them opium. And then that was how they were able to get a financial foothold in China. Well, it was something similar with the first peoples in Quebec. They sold them booze, got them hooked, and then that was how they actually got the relationship going. And of course, François de Laval just said, this is horrible. We can't do this. And he was constantly at loggerheads with the colonial powers in the particular town. And he was trying to establish a pattern of faith in this particular region. But we also know that one of the most amazing things about a great saint is that they establish an incredibly high pattern of faith, but it's also really hard to keep it up. One of the things that I found is slightly telling about the collapse of the faith in Quebec is because there haven't been saints like François de Laval, saints like Saint Marie of the Incarnation. Both of them were canonized by Pope Francis just as a moment of legal fiat. He just sent a letter one day. This was just prior to the Quebec provincial election, just like 2 years ago or last year. Pope Francis just sent a letter, they're saints now, done. There wasn't a massive canonization process, it's just done. And St. François de Laval, St. Marie of the Incarnation, St. Catherine of St. Augustine, who will be, I think it's not tomorrow, but the next day, Léonie Paradis, which one we just celebrated just a few days ago, all of these Canadian saints just condensed in a really small hill in a part of Canada. And any one of us knows when a really saintly person in your parish, they help set a pattern, they help set a tone. And then say when they go, it's really hard to maintain that pattern because there's a certain heart, there's a certain beating of the heart that is almost absent. And it's hard to maintain that drive. It's hard to maintain that sense of purpose. And so gradually the whole thing falls. And you can also see in the very reason why we have these consecrated persons in the church. It's to really understand the purity of motive that's required for the proclamation of the gospel. In Johannine theology, there are three things to worry about: the world, the flesh, and the devil. They're often phrased in slightly different ways. It could be the lust of life, the lust of the eyes, etc. The world is generally always described as world, and the devil is either the devil or the pride of life, or just personal pride. And all three of those things are counteracted by something you may have remember from various periods, what we call the evangelical councils: poverty, chastity, and obedience. All three of those things, they go together for a sense of how to really transform the interior motivation of the heart for the purposes of evangelical mission. And strictly speaking, I do not think that these things are exclusive to priests and religious. All of us have to live the evangelical councils. We have to. Now, we don't obviously have to sell everything that we have, but the evangelical council of poverty means that what must be our principal motivation? Is it having wealth? Or is it to have enough wealth so as to provide for our needs and for the good of others? Big shift. Very big shift. And unless, in a sense, wealth serves other people, it's a horrible thing. In fact, in today's Office of Readings from the first letter of John, John says, if a person has enough for themselves and hardens their heart to the poor who are right next to them, how can the grace of God be operative in that person? That this life of grace must be transforming our interior motivations. The second one of the world is I'll just skip that whole thing. You got to keep it down somehow. And then you have the second one of the world, and the world is tempting because it's what people think of you. It's your status or your relationship among people. And if a person can't be tempted with money, then they can be tempted to do good things, or they can be tempted to do bad things in order to have people approve of them, or the fear of losing approval. And so all three of these things have a way of motivating people for good and for bad. Some people will work really hard to get a job because they're afraid of poverty. But that motivation of fear obviously can't last forever. They have to move past it somehow. Then when you get to the world, obviously, if a person doesn't want to do good for goodness' sake, it's good to be a parent or a friend or somebody to motivate your friends to be able to say, do good, do good. And then for your approval, they're happy to do it. But they still have to be able to want to do good for goodness' sake. And that is an important transition to happen as well. Because a lot of the time when a person is really good, but they do it to be seen by others, you watch how quickly their resolve falls apart. They're usually the type of people that will run away the moment that, you know, Jesus is no longer popular, or when he says something that gets him into loggerheads with society, or when sometimes saying or doing something comes into conflict with the prevailing opinions of the society. We realize that the society is somewhat wrong, but we don't want to stand out. And this is where the world can also be a very dangerous temptation. The last one, the devil, the pride of life. This one's a little bit more subtle, because a lot of people confuse vanity for pride. Vanity means it's in the category of the world, what other people think of you. Pride is what I want simply for my own sake. A proud person is not really interested in whether or not you approve of them. The real approval that they want is their own approval of themselves. And this kind of person can be really motivated when they say, it doesn't matter if the people approve of me or not, I am doing God's work. I am God's ally. And I think that a lot of the people that got turned off from the church in Quebec were sick and tired of people that talked like that. The guy that would just proclaim and pontificate and declare how much better and smarter or spiritually superior he was. And this underlines a great insight in Christian moral life. The closer you get to God, the more in danger you are of the greater sins. A person who is in general danger around lust, you know, like gluttony, sexual lust, all of these different things, they may be difficult sins to overcome, but they're really not the worst. In fact, many people that are enslaved by them, you can tell that they're conflicted, they have struggles, they want to get past them, but they just kind of burdened by them. And you can see in them, like, these are good people. These are good people. And then you have a lot of good people out there that want to do good, but yet they're always afraid about what's going to happen to them, what their friends will think, what their reputation will be, will they lose their job, all this other stuff. You can understand that. But the third pride is incredibly dangerous. And that's really only available to a certain type of maturity. And so what you get in today's first reading is an interesting situation. The Roman authorities are beginning to become aware of Paul. He's being brought before this Gallio character, and the Jewish authorities are very angry. And he basically says, you know what, this is kind of a trifle. This doesn't matter to me. But in reality, the Jewish authorities are more aware of the danger of the figure that Paul represents because they understand that this is on their spiritual radar. A Roman who's only interested in maintaining peace, order, and money can't possibly understand what Paul and the Jewish authorities are arguing about. But eventually it will become clear only when there actually becomes a public argument and Paul becomes a disruption to the peace. We as Catholics can operate in the underground for quite a long time simply because most people think we're obnoxious, weird people that do weird dances on Sunday. But eventually there may come a point when they start actually asking us, what on earth are you doing and why are you saying what you say? And then we must really have our motivations clear. We love God. We wish to do what he sends us to do. We should be willing to lose all of our money. We should be willing to lose all of our public acclaim. And last of all, we should definitely be willing to let go of our own sense of our own purpose and dignity, because God will give us a better one. This will give us the strength not only to be missionaries, but to stand up for justice like St. Francois de Laval did. You can't fight against the injustice of a culture that wants to dominate the First Peoples until you're willing to let your own society go. He did it, and did it well, and laid a pattern for what the great things our country can be. I think that through the intercession of all of these great saints, we can not invent a new faith, but rediscover the very one that we have been handed on, to live it well, to live it effectively, and to live it joyously.